back to the wise man, who once said, "Be careful if you're in a hurry to get somewhere that you're not just running away from somewhere else." Now, why did the wise man say that?
Because there are a lot of people that want to get away from themselves. They will go someplace else without thinking about it.
And when they get there, they find that they took themselves with them. Indeed. All the way there. And is it not true that many of us spend our lives trying to get away from things, fooling ourselves that we're trying to get to something, but really just running away from something else? There's a story about that. You ought to be able to guess what story it is by now. Yeah, we're going to look at it one more time. We might look at it again after this, but one more aspect of the story we're going to look at. This is a very well-known story in Luke chapter 15, starting with verse 11. And let us read at least a portion of the story together. It says, and I'm reading this as the New International Version, Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had and set off for a distant country. He was going someplace. Right? He was sure that when he got there, things were going to be better. And there he squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. Things were not quite so wonderful in the far country after he'd got there and been there for a little while. Where are all of his friends who were happy to hang around him while he was rich and squandering his money? They only wanted him for his money. And so now that things have gotten a little tight, he is in need in a far country. Not quite so rosy there as when he was still on his way. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. Can you imagine having to feed animals and not being able to feed yourself? When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will go set out and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you, and I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Please make me like one of your hired men.'" So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, "What is going on?" "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed a fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never even gave me a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Christians often talk about having a relationship with God. You ever heard that expression in a Christian setting, a relationship with God? Last time we looked at this story, we noted how the younger son, particularly, although the older son was in the same boat, was more interested in his father's stuff than in his father himself. He couldn't wait for the old man to die so he could get his inheritance. And so he actually went to his father and asked for his inheritance while his father was still alive. Rather a shocking way to treat your parents. And ultimately, really sending a message, "I don't care about you. I just want your stuff." And we reflected a little bit on how easy it is for all of us to relate to God in a similar way. That what we really want is God's stuff so much of the time. But God? Well, we need him when we're in trouble, when his stuff has slipped through our fingers, when we're not doing so well. But in contrast, the father didn't care at all about his stuff. He gave it away twice, right? First when the son demanded it, and then when he came back. His stuff was useless to him if he couldn't have a relationship with his son. And so I hope that little bit of this story has given you a little bit of insight into what it means to have a relationship with God. To love and be loved for more than just what God can do for you. For more than just stuff. Both religious and non-religious people are susceptible to trying to use God for their own purposes, are they not? Now, the non-religious people want God to provide them with pleasure and money and all the things that the younger son went after, right? He was going to go out and live it up. But religious people, like the older son, often are after God just for his stuff, too. They want to get eternal life. But as far as an actual day-to-day relationship with God, an interaction with him, caring, loving, and being loved, no, I just want to put in my time in church. I'm going to do the right thing, and God, you have to take me to heaven when I die. The same attitude, stuff first, God second, can plague both those who are outwardly religious and those who are not. Ultimately, at the root of them both is the idea, I don't want anyone telling me what to do. And don't get in my way. If you're between what I have and what I want. Particularly plainly, though, was how the younger son expressed those things. The older son stayed at home, and he wasn't his father's friend any more than the younger son, but he didn't make waves about it until the younger son came home. But the younger son was pretty obvious about it all. He said, "Don't tell me what I can do and can't do." That's why he wanted the money, so he could be in charge of his own life. And he expressed at the same time, "Don't get in my way. Don't get between what I want and between me and what I want." And so when he had expressed those things and gotten his money, let's take a look at what he does with it. Verse 13. What does the younger son do once he has told his father where to go and gotten his hands on the family wealth? Yes, not long after that, he left. What else? He didn't just leave. Did you notice every detail there? Yes, he went to a far country, and anything else? He got together everything he had. Why gather together? Well, let me back up. One more thing. He gathers together everything he has. He goes on a journey to a far country. And what does he do there? He wastes his wealth. Right? He squanders it. How surprising are these developments in light of the attitudes that we have seen? Not terribly surprising. No, they're really not terribly surprising. Considering his self-centered attitude, it is not terribly surprising that he would do these things. Right? Why would he gather together everything? You get the impression that he was not planning to come back. Right? And I don't know about you, but you know, if you've ever gone on a long journey, you don't usually take all your stuff with you unless you're moving there. Anybody ever move cross-country? Most people, if they're smart, just sell everything in one place and buy new stuff in the other place. But I have carted, you know, all kinds of things cross-country, and boy, what a mess that is. But it was only because we were not planning to come back to that same location anytime soon. My brother went overseas to Germany, and he did not know at that time that he would be gone as long as he has been gone. And so I still have his tools and some of his other possessions, because when my parents moved, and they didn't know what to do with his stuff, and I moved out, so I ended up with it. I've still got his red toolbox and some of his crescent wrenches and screwdrivers and other things marked with his initial, because in our house, when there were three of us boys living at home, we didn't want any of those things to get mixed. I imagine if he ever comes back to the United States, that I'll give him a present and give him all his tools back. I don't imagine he'll bring screwdrivers with him from Germany if he ever returns to the United States. But at the time, he did not realize that he wasn't coming back so soon. And so he left things behind. It wasn't a big deal to him. He figured, oh, I can come back here and get this stuff anytime. It's at Mom and Dad's house. But this young man did not figure he was coming back home, is the impression one gets. Well, why go so far away? Why not live the wild life close to home? Right? I mean, he wanted nobody telling him what to do. Why didn't he just take all his loot and go next door?
He didn't want his parents close by.
Now, why is that? Some of you seem to know and understand what was going on in his mind. All right, there might be obligations. If he was so far away, he couldn't be called back to his father's deathbed. That's an interesting thought.
Some of us have been there before.
Yes. Why do we go far away?
He didn't want his dad to know his story. He didn't want his dad to know his
story. He didn't want anybody telling him what to do.
Yeah, although, you know, he was his own man. He had the money. He could go next door and do whatever he wanted. But there does seem to be, at some level, at least it's a good possibility, that he didn't want to live a wild life right in front of his father. What's going on in that, that it was easier to sin far away? Yes. Now, the truth is, he still might have to deal with the guilt. But we fool ourselves, at least, into thinking that it's easier to deal with the guilt if we go far away. Is that not true? Anybody can identify with that? It's easier to sin if you're not in church every week. Right?
Also, then he was trying to show his dad a little bit of respect, too.
Well, it could be in a roundabout sort of way that he didn't want his dad to have to see. I mean, honestly, his dad has been nothing but kind to him. I mean, he comes up with this unreasonable demand, and his father gives him the money. And so he may feel a real sense of guilt over what he wants to go and do with it. And he's going to go and do it anyway, but he doesn't want to do it right under his father's nose.
Don't want his father to see the other side of him.
Quite possibly. Quite possibly. However, this reveals, Notice who initiated the far away part. Preach it.
He did.
There's no word in here about his father kicking him out. His father gave him the money, but he didn't say, "Now get your sorry hide out of my sight."
He could have partied in town, too.
Yeah, his father was nothing but kind and generous to him. And he's the one that initiated going far away. And so what additional attitude might be revealed by that? We've said he already that he doesn't want his father telling him what to do, and will be to his father if he happens to get in the way by being alive. And now, what attitude about his relationship with his father is revealed when he goes far, far away? I don't care about being with you. I don't want to be obligated to come home if there's some family emergency. My life is my own, and what I want is more important than my relationship with you. So we see his desire for autonomy, the enmity that he expresses, and now separation. Getting as far away, as fast away, as far away as he can get, as fast as he can get there. How different is the older brother's attitude? How badly does he want to be with his father?
In looking at the back of the story, he was upset that his dad wouldn't even let him party a little bit.
How?
But did he ever ask?
Maybe, but my question is, how different was he on this issue of distance from his father? How interested was he really in being near to his father? Well, give me scripture or give me death. He wanted the stuff. Perhaps he felt obligated to stay there, but what insight do we get into his attitude? Is that really where he wanted to be? You almost get the impression that he's jealous of the younger brother, went to a far country and squandered the wealth of prostitutes, and now gets to come home and nobody gives him a hard time? Where is the father in this story, and where is the older son? Just give me proximity. How near is... And what makes you say that? All right, they're a long ways apart, if nothing else, in how they feel about the younger brother, right? But even physically, there's some interesting clues.
Well, the father is the only one that's not selfish in the story.
Mm-hmm.
The two sons are just kind of selfish and just want what want.
Yeah, it seems to be the case.
He didn't know his father.
No, he didn't know. He didn't really understand his father at all. But he's living in his father's house. But as the story unfolds, what indications do we get of how close the older son wants to be to his father? How do you know? What makes you say that?
Because he wants what you just said. Because he's like, what?
He All right. Like, and physically, what's actually happening at that point in the story? Go back and look.
The older son won't come in.
Yes, he won't even come in the house. He lives at his father's house. But in the story, he lives out in the field at his father's house. And when there's a party going on in the house, and that's where his father is, that's where his father's heart is, he will not darken the door. He will not countenance this kind of behavior with his presence.
He wants to put a damper on his father's door.
Absolutely. Because, and that's a beautiful insight, what would make the father happier than if his brother could come in and enjoy the celebration with them? And probably the nastiest thing he could come up with to do is to say, I am not going to participate.
He didn't talk about my brother, your son.
Yeah. I know that, and you notice later when the father's talking to him, he says, your brother. But the son says, your son. Indeed. All right, so he refuses to go in to the party. Right? He will not physically be near where his father is. Instead, where does he want to be? You recall his comments? Yeah, you never gave me even a young goat so I could go off and party with
my friend.
Not with you.
Yeah.
But so I could leave and party with someone else. He doesn't want to be with his father any more than the younger brother. He wants to be off doing what he wants to do. How surprising are these developments with the older brother? Recognizing what we have seen already about his attitude.
Not very
surprising. He has the same attitude as the younger brother. I want your stuff, not you. Why does it say that he stayed outside? Did you notice? Go back and look one more time. Why does he stay outside? Yeah, it says he became angry and stayed outside. How does staying outside help when you're angry? Pardon? Yeah, we have two things. Some said, well, it cools you off, and some say, well, it builds up.
Depending upon the weather, it can cool you off.
Why would somebody, when they're angry in this situation, why would he stay outside?
So he wouldn't have to put 2 cents anyone put in.
All right, we touched on that very real possibility that this was the nastiest thing that he could do, is to stay outside. Pardon?
He didn't want to be at that party either.
All right, and that brings to light an interesting phenomenon. When you are around a bunch of people who are all celebrating, and you want to be angry,
you might be happy.
Is that easy or hard? Easy to be angry when people are all happy around you? Well, for some, yeah, for some that may be. But I guess I'm looking at it from this perspective. Is there more pressure from other people to be nice when everyone's happy? Or when you're by yourself?
Easier to be angry when you're by yourself.
Now, some people can be angry amidst a bunch of happy people. I won't dispute that. But there's more social pressure to, oh, come on, get over it. It's not that big a deal. What, can't you come in here and celebrate? It was easier for him to stay angry the farther he was from the party. Easier to stay angry the farther he was from the party. Now, that doesn't mean he couldn't have accomplished it if he went in. Maybe he could have, but he didn't want. I get the impression he thought this was such a bad idea. He wasn't going to show his face in that house and give anybody the impression that he approved of his father's behavior. Well, and ultimately, if you want to stay angry, yeah, if you have to face people who've been nice to you, like his own father, in an attitude of celebration and forgiveness, where everyone's saying, oh, it's so great he's come home. I'm so sorry for how I treated you. I'm so glad you're all this going around. Boy, you want to stay angry? Stay away from those places. Whatever you do, don't go hanging out with people who are being nice to each other. It might rub off on you. And that would just ruin everything. What do they say about a pat on the back?
I'm 16 inches from taking the seat.
That is a very large question. Yes. Well, let's take it clear back to the big, big picture. If the Father is God and His children are His creatures, how did any of God's creatures ever come to see Him? Well, among us, but how did Satan ever come to see God the way that he views Him? How did he ever come to misunderstand the character of God so much that he would think God is a tyrant? He's just stopping me from doing all the fun stuff. And the sooner I can get out from under his thumb and do it my own way, the better it's going to be. Honestly, there is no good explanation for that question. Because God didn't do anything wrong. The reality is, at some level, in order for there to be love between God and His creatures, they must have the possibility of not loving Him. And that's not an explanation of how it happened. It just means it is possible for someone to misunderstand. For someone to look at God and instead of seeing what He's really like, to see a made-up false view of Him. So the fact that it can happen is the only explanation that I can give. It can happen. Even for the very best parent. Now in this world we've got all kinds of other liabilities, just like the first human beings tempted by Satan, all right? There was somebody there to whisper in their ear lies about God. But even the very best parent in this world can have children misunderstand, and there may be no good explanation for it, except that it is possible. It is possible to go that route. Yes?
Do we truly have our eyes, our heart, looking at our Father?
Well, it's fascinating because I was looking at this story in light of Satan and his fall. Boy, I don't know if I'm going to get these words out. Bear with me for a moment, just because these are new thoughts that have been scrambling around my head, and I didn't write them down or anything. Satan was sure that if he could get out from under God's grip, things would be better. Right? And that's just like the younger son. He was sure that he knew a better way. And that if he could just run the universe his way, if he could just have things his way, it would be better. Well, when he got there, did it turn out so much better?
No.
No, because selfishness is not better than love. And it absolutely makes a mess of your life. And now what does Satan have to look forward to? Nothing but death, nothing but destruction. And so all he can do is try to take as many with him as he can. But there's no way out. There's no good way out for him. Now, here's what happened. He had somehow got in his mind a picture that God was a tyrant. And not a safe person, not a nice person that he was controlling. That he was withholding good things from Satan himself. Who is that a description of? Really?
That's just like the one who stayed out.
Well, yes. Well, yes. It's actually a description of Satan himself. In other words, he became like what he was running from. Mm-hmm. Now, it turns out he was wrong. But what he was running from was not God. What he was running from ultimately was himself. He had projected an understanding of what was going on in his own heart out there on God, as though that was the reality. And you can't get away from somebody else when what you're really running from is yourself. Same thing that happened with the younger son. He thought, my dad is such a, you know, all he cares, he must have thought, all he cares about is his stuff. So I'm going to get his stuff and get out of here. And when he got out there, all he cared about was his stuff. And the people that hung around him knew that. And so when he didn't have any stuff anymore, the people he had been hanging around him, all they cared about was his stuff. And so they dropped him like a bad habit. And then now he's stuck. He's in a mess. Selfishness just doesn't work. But he was running away from his father's selfishness, he thought. And what caught up with him was his own. So how I don't know. There is no good explanation for how it happens. But the fact is, all of us are created with the right to turn from being other-centered and caring about other people to being most concerned about ourselves. We can. We don't have to. Of course, born now in this world where things are such a mess, we start out that way. Right? That's our default, is being more concerned about ourselves than other people. But in God's universe, every creature He's made has the right to turn selfish if they want. And if they do, immediately what happens is, in their minds, God is selfish. You live in a false reality that doesn't exist, and you run away from yourself until it catches up with you. It's a strange thing. So I don't know if that answers the question, how could these sons have so misunderstood their father? The reality is they could. All of us have the option to be selfish if we want.
Human nature.
And when you are, you automatically assume that everyone else is the same way. It's impossible to understand, or nearly impossible to understand, someone being kind to you when you're being nasty to them. It just doesn't click and doesn't make sense. Because you assume there's an ulterior motive, they're after something is going on, because you know you would never be kind when someone was being that nasty to you. There's no frame of reference. And so these sons, once they were focused on themselves, could read everything their father did the wrong way. Everything. The kindest things he did, they could see in the wrong light. Okay?
That's kind of like the picture people have of God.
Yes.
As I sin, he's mad at me.
Yes.
I wronged him, he's mad at me. I have to kiss up and make him like me so he'll forgive me.
Because that's how I treat people who wrong me.
Yeah.
Well, when you get yourself together, you come groveling back to me, then maybe I'll...
And are you really sorry?
Yeah. That's what I think God is like, but that's mostly because that's what I'm like. And this, of all stories in the Bible, is one of the most wonderful stories to dispel that picture of God. He's sitting around waiting.
Not sitting, going out.
All right, thank you. He seems to be doing nothing else. He's not getting anything done. He's just hoping and praying. And when someone shows the littlest bit of hair over the horizon, boom, he's off on a run. Not standing on the porch going, yeah, it's about time you showed up around here. I knew you'd be groveling back. That's not a father. Jerry?
He don't care. God don't care how far that you've
mm-mm.
been gone.
No, and he doesn't care how bad you smell.
And he doesn't care if you don't have perfect clothes now. Or perfect speech or anything.
Yeah.
He just wants
Amen.
You.
Amen. That's it, brother. That's it. He's not satisfied living through the rest of eternity without you. If there's any possible way that he can have you there. That's what a relationship with God is about. Does that make any sense to you?
Amen.
Is there anybody that you know, that you're just excited to know them, to be with them, to enjoy their presence? You don't want to be parted from them? That's how God feels about you. And it's a total bummer whether you've gone to a far country so that you can sin without feeling guilty in his presence, or whether you're sitting around in the church going, yeah, those other people are sinners, but I've got myself together. Either one is
a lost son.
Yeah. Is a stiff arm to God's face. And he wants both the older sons and the younger sons to have a relationship with him. A loving interaction. A meaningful knowing of each other. Well, can you identify? You find it's easier, we said this one already, easier to sin if you stay away from church. Easier to sin if you don't pray. Am I the only one who's been tempted and thought, oh, I should pray, but then didn't pray because I was afraid that I might not fall into temptation? Did you follow that?
Yeah.
Am I the only one that's done that?
No.
We've all done it sometimes.
Have you noticed that it's easier to stay angry if you stay away from God? And even if you're angry with someone else, you go and pray, and God says, look how gracious I've been to you. It's awfully hard to stay angry in the presence of God.
When you pray, that's the party. God is happy
and
all the angels.
Yeah.
It's like you're entering in the house where they're all married.
Yeah, and they're like, hey, what's the big deal? You know, come on, this is such an insignificant thing. Get over it. Be happy with us. So celebrate. Yeah. Yeah. But how many times have I been angry and refused to go in? Wow. Yeah. All right, let's look back at the younger son for a moment. How well did he manage his belongings when he got to the far country? It doesn't say, and it doesn't matter an awful lot. We don't know how long Adam and Eve spent in the garden before they sinned either. That's one of those unknowns, I think. And it's a story, you know, it's for illustrative purposes. Well, you know, depending how much wealth you have, it could take a long time or a little while. But how well did he handle it? Poorly. What's the word that he uses there?
Squander.
Squander. You know what squander means? It gives it, you get that impression, don't you?
Yes. They yeah. weren't friends. They just were
They were hired acquaintances.
Well, they were to me. There was a friend.
Yes, that's the one of the terms we use. Do you know what the word squander means?
The waste.
Wasteful. Waste. Yes. Wasteful. So in other words, he showed up there and he wasted his resources. He didn't use them well. Why does that matter? Why do we tell people not to waste their resources?
Because you need them later.
Yeah. You need them later. He wasted what was given to him. But what specific circumstance makes wasting such a bad idea? Yeah, it's implied in what Nancy said. You'll need it later.
You're not tithing an offering, you're not giving.
Right, but what happens if you waste your resources?
You lose
them. Pardon?
I'm green.
Oh, you were green, all right.
You.
Yeah, not used for their intent. You lose it. It's implied in both what Nancy said. You'll need them later, and you lose them. When he was, let me back up one more step. Who cares if you lose your resources?
Well,
In other words, if you lose your resources, if you lose your principle, if you will, you can't just stand under a tree and get more. Your resources are limited, at least if you are far from home. So there's nothing wrong with wasting your resources if you can always get more. Right? Spend and spend and spend and go back and get more and spend. Nothing wrong with that. The problem is that his resources are limited. He gathered together everything he had. And when he gets there, it's wasteful because he's going to run out. He can't just keep spending and spending like there's no tomorrow because he has only limited resources. When you go far away from God, your resources become very limited. That's why we die, by the way. Right? Because as long as you're alive and healthy, you can always earn more resources. So the one resource that we all have with us all the time is our own life energy and life force. But when you go far away from God, even that resource runs out all too quickly. Why is that? That when you're far from God, your resources run out. Because God is the source of everything. He's the only one who doesn't have to worry about being wasteful. Which kind of gives me a little more insight into the father in the story, right? Because here he wastes all this money on his son, and the son goes off, and when he comes back home, he gives him more. And the older brother is complaining. That's because he thinks his father's resources are limited. That you have to take from me to give to... He doesn't understand something about his father's resources. Very interesting. Well, yeah, at thinking in strictly human terms, he had divided his living between that. I don't know. But we're going to get into some more of this next time we talk about this story. It's a very interesting word that it actually says he divided his life between them. Where it says his inheritance, his wealth, it's bios. Literally, it's the word life. So everything that he had earned or gained up to that point in his life, the father, he split and divided between the sons. But guess what? He's still alive. So it ain't necessarily so that he has to take away from the older brother in order to give to the younger brother when he comes back. He's still alive, man. He can still work. He can still... So that's an interesting thing to consider. There is no indication in the story that he took away from the older brother in order to give to the younger brother when he came home. He just wasn't concerned about wasting his own life. That didn't bother him. He was happy to do that time and time again. Fascinating insight. All right, why did the younger brother spend his money this way? What must a person believe in order to continue wasting their limited resources on things that don't bring any lasting joy? I have a hard time reading that into the story the way that it reads. We get the impression that he was not completely in reality about how wasteful he was being. But notice this. Even when the lights begin to dawn, and someone is, remember we said spending down the principal, right? If he wanted to use his resources well, he would have invested them so that he could get more and live off the interest. You follow what I'm saying? And in some sense, that's what we're all trying to do in our lives, even if it's just going to work and working a job. You could waste your life energy resources by, you know, going out and just partying all day long, and then you don't have anything to eat because you didn't invest first so you can get some interest back, some return back. And that's what the path he was on. He was just spend. He's about in the pigsty. Spend. He keeps spending until he's in the pigsty and can't do anything else. What belief leads a person to continue doing that until their resources are completely gone?
As long as he still sees a little bit of gold left in his purse, he still has gold.
Either he didn't believe that it was a limited resource, or why did he? Pardon?
Figured he knew where he could get some more.
Figured he knew where he could get some more.
He didn't value that because he hadn't earned it in the first place.
Well, that certainly seems to apply. But why would a person continue to spend even when they recognize I'm running out faster than I'm getting back?
So that they will be liked. So that people will like.
All right. He actually seems to believe that he can get the life he wants by spending his resources. He believes that he's going to be happy if he just spends a little bit more. Yeah, it's much like gambling. But in other words, he thought, I'm going to take this money, I'm going to go out, I'm going to find the life I wanted. And as long as you think you can get the life you wanted by spending your resources until you have nothing left, you'll keep trying it.
It's a rut.
Yeah.
It's hard. Once you get in the rut, that's...
Well, because there is some...
it's hard to get out of.
There is some reinforcement, right? I mean, it was shallow, but it was working. He had friends. He was happy. He felt good. He got to drink what he wanted and eat what he wanted.
Stay where he wanted. Stay up.
Yeah. And that masked for him the fact that it wasn't really making him happy. And so he continued to spend and spend his resources, even though it wasn't really getting him anywhere.
And being raised in the situation where he was, where the resources were always there, and never, you get that mentality, and it takes a, in the pigsty.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Perhaps he had not ever come face to face with the limitedness of his resources. There are many people who believe that they can gain life, liberty, and happiness through the expenditure of their own resources. One more fix is all I need. And that can be drugs. That can be the rush that comes from a burst of anger.
Work.
That can be work. That can be any number of things that I just, if I do it my way, I think I'm going to get where I wanted to go. And the reality is, we're not getting somewhere so much of the time. We're just digging a hole and pouring our life energy down that hole.
Maybe the Father had shown, I know in this case we're saying the Father's God, but in a human family, mm-hmm. sometimes kids don't see the struggle parents go through, so they think, oh,
to provide resources.
Mom and Dad always had it, so it's easy. It's good to take it, and then go to the bank and get more, right?
Yeah, this is
a false reality.
Right, money comes from the bank, or money comes from the, as if you didn't have to put it in there to begin with. Yeah.
He was even banking that thing.
That's right. I got an ATM card. Sure, there's got to be money in that machine for me.
There's more checks in my checkbook.
Yeah, that's. I've heard of people balancing their checkbook. There's got to be more money in here. I've got more checks. That's certainly true, and it's one of the interesting things. I haven't been looking at it so much from that direction, but as parents, teach your children about the limits of resources while they're small, and it doesn't cost them so much. Instead of waiting until they're 26 or whatever this guy was, and they go off, and when they crash and burn, it's a real crash and burn. We would like to think that he could have learned that lesson in a smaller and less intense way. Right. We're going to talk about that some more again when we look at kind of a father this is. All right. What do we call this attitude toward God? Where we say, well, God, I think I can arrive at the life that I want by the expenditure of my own resources. Oh boy, are we really that late? Sheesh, what happened here? We got a slow start. What do we call that kind of an attitude toward God, where my resources are going to get me the life I want?
Selfishness.
Selfishness, self-centered. Some might even call it self-salvation. Some, like the younger brother, seek a salvation of pleasure. They're going to build their heaven on earth. Live the good life. Right? Play hard. Die young. What? How's that?
Live hard.
Live fast. Play hard. I'm not sure how that works. How different is the older brother?
He just did it. Kind of.
What does he think is going to get him the life that he wants?
He's
trying to earn it.
He earned it.
Responsibility keeps him there.
Yes.
He's going to earn.
Upon whose resources? Upon whose resources is he depending to get what he wants?
His father.
Not really. I've slaved for you. And he's upset because his father didn't give him what he thinks he deserves. But it's his own resources that he thinks should have earned him the life that he wanted to go party with his friends. Wow. Same attitude from the older brother, even though he was very religious. Instead of taking his money and getting heaven on earth, he was serving the Father to gain his heaven in heaven, but it was still his own resources that he was relying on.
They both wanted the same thing, they just went about it different ways.
Yeah. One in the less socially acceptable way, and one in a slightly more socially acceptable way. Well, we have entirely run out of time, but that really throws things off because we finished this sermon at Surprise Valley. I think we can do the last two things real quick, but we'll make it quick. All right. Having spent everything, when a famine arose, he began to be in need, went out and hired himself to who?
A hog farmer.
Yes. He became literally an apprentice hog farmer. And he sent him into his fields to feed swine. Now, you understand naturally for Jews that that would have been a disgusting line of work to go into. But it gets worse. It says he would gladly have filled his belly with the paws that the swine ate, and no one gave him anything. How smart is it to feed a pig during a famine? Ecologically now. How smart is it?
They're very poor. Their digestive system is very poor, so they eat a lot of stuff.
Well, and think about this just in principle. Are you familiar with... Are you familiar with, how much food value it takes, how much stuff growing out of the ground it takes to feed an animal that you then turn around and eat? Are you familiar with the math? Pardon?
10 pounds for 1 pound.
All right. I'm not familiar with all the math, but it could easily be that. So you follow what I'm saying? During a famine, how smart is it to be keeping livestock to eat rather than eating the food yourself?
Well, couldn't believe anything.
Yes, but he was feeding, the word here is carob pods, basically. You know, they were feeding him stuff that is rather dense. Human nutrients, yeah, I don't know about stir fry them, but it was edible stuff. He wanted to eat it. Well, and that's a nice idea. But what's going on here in the story is not the pigs eating scraps. The pigs are eating the food, and the human is going hungry. Right, this is a bad idea in general, especially during a famine, to take food that human beings could eat and feed it to an animal, and then you're going to go slaughter the animal and eat it. You'd have been better off in a famine to eat the food first yourself. Now, besides that, he's Jewish. Who's going to eat the pig? Right. Well, so this is a bad idea all the way around. He is wasting his life energy delivering food that he could eat during a famine and to a very inefficient way of producing food, and it's not even food that he's going to eat. Talk about a dead-end job. I mean, this is bad, bad news. What, he must be slightly out of his mind. Well, he's trying to get something to put in his stomach, right? And if they pay him a little something for feeding the pigs. But you follow why it says he came to himself? He goes, whoa, this is a really bad idea. How much worse could it get? This is worse than pointless. This is self-destructive. This is the kind of thing that we get on when we know something's bad for us and we keep doing it. And keep doing it, and keep doing it. You know, they did tests with rats where they would deliver a dose of an addictive drug to them every time they pushed a little lever, and then they electrified the lever. So they would get a shock every time they wanted to get a dose of the drug. I don't remember what drug it was. And they would up the shock each time, so it was getting stronger and stronger and stronger. How long do you think the rats went on shocking themselves to get the drug? Until they died from the shock. This is the kind of craziness that this young man was engaged in. Feeding pigs rather than yourself in a famine is self-destructive behavior. Did the older son have the same problem? He kept working and kept working, though no one gave him anything. He was going to do it if it killed him.
But it was going to be his. Okay, well, he said that he divided it and gave it to his boy. So it was his. Yes.
And he actually said, everything I have is yours. But he still has this attitude that I'm going to keep doing this. It's the last thing I do. So, here's your question. Some people are addicted to religious activities, continue trying to please God, even though they resent every minute, and some people are addicted to non-religious activities. Both can be equally destructive. The difference between the older and younger brother?
One came to his senses.
That's the only difference. The younger brother reached the end of his resources and said, whoa, this is a bad idea. The older brother, where we leave him in the story, still thinks that if he tries hard enough, he's going to get what he was after.
If the story hadn't ended that way, the dad would have died and the older brother would have said, I didn't know my dad. You know, he'd have felt he was cheated. Just kind of the same way. I mean, his dad would have died, and the son would have said, I don't know him.
It would have been gone. The opportunity would have been gone to know him at that point. Are you feeling a need? Have you yet come to the end of your resources? where I want to be in the story. If you haven't come to the end of your resources yet, you probably don't have a clue what I'm talking about. But if you have, there's good news. You can have a relationship with a Father who has no end of resources. And He has always loved you. All you have to do is give up on doing it your own way, right? Do you believe life is not better without God's boundaries? It just simply isn't. If God says don't do something, it's for your own good. Not because He's trying to keep the tasty stuff out of your mouth. God is not your enemy. If there's any enmity problem between me and God, the problem is in my heart, not His. And separation from God may make it easier to stay angry, but it's not a good thing. It just makes your resources very, very limited. So come home. Quit trying to fix it your own way and throw yourself on God's mercy. And how can you expect to be received? With open arms. With open arms. This is the God of the Bible. This is the God that I want to come to know and love more every day. Let us pray. Heavenly Father,